Finn's Monday opening drive is on the air. Sunday has come and gone, but our Finn's coverage is still full gear. We'll bring you live coverage of Coach Philbin's Monday press conference, plus a complete breakdown of yesterday's game. It's Dolphins Monday opening drive right now.
Welcome to the show. A little bit of a different kind of Dolphins Mondays. John Congemi is here. Sam Anderson is here. I'm Jesse Agler. We don't have a game from yesterday to discuss. No Joe Philbin press conference upcoming, but still plenty of football to talk about. Going back to the Dolphins' 19-14 loss on Thursday night at Buffalo, to everything else that took place yesterday around the National Football League. It'll be a fun hour of conversation. And then we got your normal Finsider show coming up at 5 today. Joe Philbin and return man Marcus Thigpen will join us in studio coming up later this afternoon. John and Sam, guys, I mean, we continue to discuss this game, and we want to hear from you guys, by the way. 1-855-GO-FINS to call in, 1-855-GO-FINS. You can also text in at 347-347. And we got the live chat fired up at Dolphins. Tristan, is everybody having a good time in there so far?
They are. I think that they're looking forward to a new week, starting fresh, and Sunday's game, actually being able to watch a Dolphins game on a Sunday. So.
I think starting fresh is a good way to look at it. I mean, guys, obviously, it was a difficult loss on Thursday night. You get a couple of extra days of rest, a couple of extra days of preparation, and now it's bring on the Seattle Seahawks. It's good to recharge the battery, I think, after a game like that.
It really is, because you go through two losses that, you know, you didn't play your best, and you want to be able to come out and improve and get a couple days away from the facility, get ready for your next game, especially at home at Sun Life Stadium. And the Dolphins offensively, they want to get back on track. They want to get their young quarterback back, getting the ball out on time, doing all the things he did, and show all those flashes of why we're so happy that he's our quarterback. You know, you get a young guy in there, and you have a fast start, and you're playing well, and you're going to get some bumps, and he's hit a couple of those, and it's just not all on the quarterback position. It's up front, it's in the running game, it's consistency on defense. So it must be nice to get back in the facility today, Sam, after having a couple days away, just to recharge and get focused again, because no matter you win, lose, or draw, you got to play your best in about 6 days. So you have to be able to get prepared mentally and physically.
And it must have been draining for these guys the last couple of the last week and a half as well, because it's just been so much going on. When you try to put these games in back-to-back the way that the Dolphins did over the last week and a half, is just something that takes a toll on your body. And then having to travel and being on the road and away. Now you're back at home. Excuse me. You're back at home. You get opportunity to really hone in onto the things that set you back into this point now, and playing that game against Buffalo. We knew it was going to be a tough-fought football game. Look across the National Football League, a lot of rival football games. In every last one of them, it was either a 3-point or 4-point swing, and that's the same situation that the Dolphins are in. So they have opportunity to play Seattle, somebody that they don't play very often. They're not very familiar with them. So to throw some different things at Seattle and to be able to get some big plays and having a situation to just bounce back and be fresh, you know, it was just like a bye week for these guys. So and we've seen what these guys can do going into a bye, coming out. They come out fast, and hopefully they can do this again. Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, Seattle is coming off a bye, coming off a literal bye. They've got the longest trip in the NFL to make. We always talk about travel in the NFL. It's more difficult to go west to east than it is east to west. So this is definitely a challenge for a Seattle team that's led by a rookie quarterback. You cannot make a longer non-international road trip in the National Football League than Miami to Seattle or Seattle to Miami, and that's what will take place this week. You know, it's rest versus rust when you're talking about a bye week, and is Seattle going to look great because they had a little bit of time off, or are they going to look rusty because they had a little bit of time off? No way to know that, but that's obviously something we'll be discussing a lot this week.
Yeah, and Seattle has a challenge of their own. Even though they have had time to rest, only one victory away from home, and that's a challenge for a young team with a young quarterback that has a good defense and a good running game. So they're going to have to get ready to play a team, as you said, it's never easy to travel from coast to coast, especially especially from Seattle to Miami. So that, you know, that should be an advantage for the Miami Dolphins. I would imagine, Sam, that Seattle feels like they haven't played a game in probably 2 or 3 weeks after waiting around and getting, you know, boarding the plane. I'm not sure if they're coming down early or not, but it's still going to be a long time between the last snap and the first snap. And that's a good sign for the Miami Dolphins, because this team should be hungry after the way the last two games have gone.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sorry, Sam. And look, we'll talk a lot about Seattle between now and Sunday, obviously, but I still think we owe a little bit more conversation to what took place on Thursday night in Orchard Park. The Bills beat the Dolphins 19-14. Miami falls to 4-6. They have now lost three consecutive games. I threw something out there on Friday, and this is more of a fan thing than it is a team thing or a coaching thing. You know, I said it's kind of funny, because I think in the last six games, instead of the Dolphins winning three in a row and then losing three in a row, if they would have gone win-loss, 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 I think the fans would feel a lot differently right now. And that might sound silly because, look, six games, 3-3, it's all the same, but it's really not, because I think what took place, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong out there, I think what took place is the Dolphins won three in a row, and all of a sudden, everybody started throwing that P word out there. Everybody started talking about the playoffs. The expectations were really ratcheted up. We said, hey, Ryan Tannehill's comfortable. The offensive line is great. The Dolphins can run the ball. You know, you won three in a row. You're over 500, and you thought it was just going to keep getting better and better and better each week. And instead, we sort of had this normal regression that you would expect with a team that's got a rookie quarterback out there and the amount of film that has now, you know, been put out by this Dolphin offense. And other teams made adjustments, and then you just had some bad plays and those kinds of things. And people got really, really down after these last three. And look, you lose three in a row, people are going to be really, really down.
Right.
But I guess my premise is, I think that expectations got a little bit skewed when the Dolphins won three in a row. And had they just gone win-loss, win-loss, win-loss in their last six, as opposed to win-win-win, loss-loss-loss, I think people would probably be a little bit more positive than they are right now. But as I said, you lose three in a row, people are going to be upset, especially when you lose them the way the Dolphins have lost them, because the team just hasn't really moved the ball much at all the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, just haven't moved the ball very much. And I think you have to go back and look to the preseason. After losing every game in the preseason, then all of a sudden, you know, going into the first week, you lose that game, and then guys, all of a sudden, they excelled. You see the running game. You see the big plays down the field, plus 20-yard plays week in and week out, and then all of a sudden, it comes to a screeching halt. That's because teams are starting to game plan more. They're starting to see exactly what the Miami Dolphins do very well and what they don't. So all of the last couple of weeks, you see a couple of teams that, hey, a lot of people around the community is sitting there looking like, penciling in, hey, that should be a win. This should be a win. That should be a win. But in the National Football League, you cannot predict what week you're going to win and you're going to lose. You have to go out there and you have to play the game. And all of a sudden, teams are getting comfortable playing the Miami Dolphins. They're loading up the ball, trying to make you one-dimensional. And when you do that and you don't have that play-action pass, that running game to really solidify on the offensive side of it, it's going to drain your defense. We were looking at this defense early on in the season. It's like, hey, they're bending, but they're not breaking, and having an opportunity to come out with winning those games after giving up large numbers of yards in the passing game. Hey, it starts to catch up to you, and it caught up to us over the last couple of weeks.
I think it was more expectations, Sam, than anything, because when you take a look at the schedule and the way the Miami Dolphins have played, when they got on that three-game winning streak, it wasn't like we were running the football with any authority. It wasn't like we were dominating on the ground. We were getting by, and we were finding ways to win. And had the Miami Dolphins had not lost to teams of lesser caliber, I guess, right, with the respect around the league, you know, everybody's good and everybody has talent, but they haven't been able to put it together. The Buffalo Bills really hadn't been able to get on track. The Tennessee Titans were down. They had just been humiliated at home. If those scenarios were different, you might be able to accept the three wins and then the three losses, but I just think the expectations were so high, and Miami was playing well and they were winning, but it wasn't like they were being dominant when they were getting those wins.
Yeah.
And I think that we got, not all got caught in a trap, but we all really had a look at it, you know, standing back and say, okay, how did we get to those W's? At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter how you get it as long as you get it, but I think the coaching staff were going back, you know, watching film saying, you know what, guys, we won, but this is what we need to correct to get better and beat teams that way.
It's funny you say that, because I remember after a couple of the wins, I said, yep, oh man, you know, there's some ugliness here. And yeah, it's nice to get the W, but there are a lot of things that didn't go well and a lot of things that if you're a coach, you got to go back and correct. Similarly, you know, look at a couple of the games
that
you lost.
Yeah.
You know, that Arizona game, the first Jet game. And, you know, if
They played well.
Yeah. Like, there were better things in those, some things that were better in those games than in the wins. And, you know, and that's the thing that I think, you know, differs the most when you're talking about the way you watch the game as a fan or an analyst or a broadcaster, and when you watch it as a coach or a player. Arizona game, it's a loss. It's a loss. But, man, if you're Ryan Tannehill, if you're Mike Sherman, if you're Joe Philbin, if you're Brian Hartline, there's a lot of good things to take out of that Arizona game. Conversely, you know, you lose one of those tough games that the Dolphins lost. Maybe the Indianapolis game, okay, hey, you know, some things happening here. And some of the wins you had, some bad, ugly things in there as well. It's very funny the way that works out, and it's something you got to be very, very careful of when you kind of look at the big picture. 1-855-GO-FINS is the telephone number, 1-855-GO-FINS. You can also text in at 347-347. And, of course, Tristan is in the Geico Comment Center chatting with the fans. We'll check in with her throughout the day. Joe Philbin going to be in studio coming up during the Finsider show this afternoon at 5. Also, Marcus Thigpen, who was obviously one of the bright notes from the game the other night against Buffalo, becomes the first Dolphin ever to have a kick return for a touchdown and a punt return for a touchdown in the same season. Incredible that has never happened going all the way back to 1966, but Marcus Thigpen made it happen the other day. Another, you know, kind of good special teams moment for this team in a season that has many good special teams moments. Not that it's been perfect, obviously, but they've certainly had their fair share. Let's go back, though, to the micro, you know, and the things that aren't going well for the Dolphins. It didn't go well for the Dolphins against Buffalo the other night. I think the offense is obviously the place to start. It'd be easy to pick on the defense. They pitched a shutout in the second half. The only touchdown Buffalo scored, right, was the first touchdown was a special teams touchdown for the Bills. And so, you know, you got to start with the offense, I think. One offensive touchdown in the last two games. The Dolphins haven't had a play of at least 20 yards since the second quarter of the Colts game. Second quarter of the Colts game was the last time they had a play of over 20 yards. Obviously, defenses have adjusted. Obviously, defenses are seeing things. You know, we've talked a lot this year about stacking the box and taking the runaway. Ryan Tannehill said on Thursday night, Buffalo wasn't necessarily doing that. The Dolphins just couldn't get any push up front. They had trouble in all facets of the offense, it seemed. What stood out to you guys as maybe the place to start when it comes to making corrections on offense?
Well, the one thing you got to do, you got to be able to stretch the field. You got to be able to beat this cover two defense that these teams are playing against the Dolphins right now. We saw early on in the year where they were dropping a safety down and they were putting another guy in the box, and we still was hitting big plays with Reggie Bush and Daniel Thomas and Lamar Miller in occasional runs. But now what they're doing, it was like, hey, we want you guys to beat us with the pass. Forget about the run. They're using seven guys up front, and it started back with the Indianapolis Colts, and then it's a copycat league in the last couple of games have been the same situation. So what we got to do, and we knew this, we needed that home run hitter wide receiver to be able to get that double team and hopefully be able to utilize somebody else to work the middle and the outside seams, but that's not happening. Now they're putting those two deep safeties back there, and they're making these guys throw the ball inside and in front of them, and everybody's converging to the ball. So you got to stretch the field. You have to throw the ball deep to loosen up those seven guys in the front, those defense line and linebackers, and come up with big plays, and that will loosen these guys up and making them start to blitz a little bit more, and then you'll find those one-on-one matchups on the outside.
You mentioned, Sam, the one-on-one matchups. I just think we need to start winning a little, our majority, you know, of those matchups, because when it comes down to it, you're going to have an opportunity to win on the outside, and you just have to take advantage of that. And, you know, Brian Hartline and Devon Best and whoever that third guy that you know, emerges to you, whether that's Moore or Gaffney or even a combination of Fasano and Clay, you know, those guys have kind of disappeared out of the offense over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, Charles had that seam route down the middle. If you hit that, that's a plus 20 play. That's a big play in the game. You know, Brian gets a push off at the end of the game. You know, that extends the drive. Instead of pass interference, you've got the ball on the Bills' 50 side of the 50-yard line, and you're moving to try to win the football game. So there's a lot of elements offensively, I guess, Jesse, that you can focus in on. For me, it's winning one-on-one matchups on the outside, but up front, we need to be a little bit more consistent. There's been way too many times that, you know, the young quarterback's getting pressure and he's not sure where it's coming from. And sometimes it's unsettling because it throws off your timing and rhythm in the passing game. And you could see this offense hasn't been able to really take the tempo from the first part of the year. That tempo was really at a high pace and they were getting it to the line, running a lot of plays. And now it seems like, you know, too many three and outs are stalling the tempo on offense.
Yeah, Q Mania in the live chat says the Dolphins need to get back to running first and dominating teams in the trenches. And I responded to him, that's exactly what they need to do in theory. you know, theoretically you would love to say, yeah, just get back to running the ball first. But the last couple of weeks, even when they have run first, it hasn't been there. And that goes back to what you're saying about winning the matchups. They've been stuffed at the line. You know, they've been driven backwards. And he countered with, but aren't they giving up on the run too early? I don't, because they're not giving themselves an opportunity to get it rolling. If you run on first down and you lose 2 yards, or even if you gain a yard, okay, you're 2nd and 9. You can't run on 2nd and 9. Not consistently, not when you're getting beat up front. So then you got to pass. And maybe you do run on 2nd and 9, and then you're in 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. It hasn't been there, and the running game has not been successful. And I've gone back and looked at the last couple of games, you know, why they quote-unquote gave up on the run. Because it's easy to say, hey, they only had 18 combined carries, they gave up on the run. But if you go back and look at it, they're running on first down, getting stuffed, losing 5 yards. That happened a couple of times the other night in Buffalo. And when you're 2nd and 15, that's it. You're in pass mode. And the defense knows you're in pass mode. Look, maybe once in a while you run a draw or whatever, but in general, the Dolphins are getting beat up front, and that goes to your point, and that's the problem. It's more of, you know, whether it's the actual illness or the sign of the illness that you're worried about. The sign of the illness is the lack of running plays. The illness itself is getting beat up front and not being able to have any success running the football. It's the symptom that's easy to see, but it's the overall illness, I think, that's the issue. So we'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about all of that. Obviously, everybody wants to see the Dolphins run more. Everybody wants to see the Dolphins run more. I think Joe Philbin wants to see it. Reggie Bush wants to see it. Ryan Tannehill wants to see it.
O-line
wants to see it. Q-Mania wants to see it. I want to see it, but it's way easier said than done, and we'll dive a little bit more deep into that.
Before we go to the break, can you write Sam and I a prescription? We need. I didn't.
Get a lot of symptoms.
Yeah, we got a lot of symptoms.
More team coverage in minutes on Dolphins Monday opening drive.
Ready, break.
Well, obviously, we got to be more productive as a football team. We got to make more plays in critical times. That's going to be a huge focus. And we'll have extra time. We'll have a little extra practice on the Seattle Seahawks. And we have to come up as a coaching staff. Our responsibility is to get these guys in position to make plays. And we've got to come up with an excellent plan. And then they've got to execute.
That's the key part at the end there. That was Joe Philbin on Friday. We got to come up with a plan. And then they got to execute it. You know, the planning can only take you so far. Any player will tell you that. And as we discussed last segment, Dolphins having trouble up front, that's the issue. The scheme isn't the issue. The play call isn't the issue. It's getting beat. It's an offensive lineman getting beat by a defensive lineman. It's a tight end getting beat by a linebacker. It's a wide receiver getting beat by a cornerback. Those are the big issues as we see them. Dolphins Monday opening drive rolling on as we get ready for the Dolphins and the Seahawks on Sunday. Obviously continue to look back at the game against Buffalo the other night. Sam Madison is here. John Congemi is here. We'll take your phone calls at 1-855-GO-FINS and your text messages at 347-347. The stagnant offense is certainly a top area of discussion, and we'll get back to it. But the other things that are troublesome right now for the Dolphins are the turnover margin. It's the turnover margin, and it's not just the giveaways, and those have been big, no doubt. But it's the lack of takeaways also. And so, you know, it's easy to mention the Hartline fumble the other night or the Reggie fumble the week before or the interceptions thrown by Ryan Tannehill the last couple of weeks. Very easy to mention those. It's less easy to bring up the lack of takeaways. And whether it was Jimmy Wilson in the end zone, which would have been a 3-point save for the Dolphins at the end of the half the other night, or any of the other opportunities that they have had, this defense has got to help them out sometimes. And look, the defense has played well. The bend but don't break thing, it ain't by design, but it's worked well enough in most of the games this year. Certainly went well enough the other day. Defense was not the problem against Buffalo. They gave up a lot of yards, but they kept them out of the end zone. But those takeaways, they are game changers. And obviously the Dolphins, they need a spark to change the game.
Haven't had a turnover since the Jets game where they had 2 in that football game. And when you're looking at the National Football League and the way that these offenses are built nowadays, they are built to put points on the board. And you have to go above and beyond as a defensive player to try to make a play and try to get into the end zone. You sit and you watch games around college. You watch games around the National Football League. You can even watch Park Warner games if you want to, but as a defensive player, it is your opportunity to try to put points on the board and, you know, to pad your stats. And we've had a couple of opportunities in the last 2 or 3 games where we had our hands on the ball, situations to where we could have, if we just catch those balls, we could have maybe even put points on the boards. But like you're saying, Jesse, the other day, Jimmy right in the end zone, you know, and there's a lot of other guys as well. So, you know, those are the glaring ones because they were right there and nobody else was around. And people are going to remember those because you were right there. You had it in your hands. And the same thing with Sean Smith. A couple of games ago, Indianapolis, he had the ball in his hands, and he just couldn't come up with it. So you have to do something above and beyond, make the play as a defensive player, and we always talk about it. And many times you can get the ball back to your offense. You still have a young quarterback. You still have a young right tackle. You still have a center who is still new. He's only his second year. A lot of young players on the offense to take the pressure off of those guys. Coach Sherman, he's able to call decent plays and not put the guys in a situation to where they're backed up and they have to, you know, make extravagant plays, you know, out of the ordinary plays. Give those guys an opportunity to get the ball back, and when you do that, you take a little bit of pressure off them as well.
I think it goes back to just making some game-changing plays. You know, it's one of those scenarios where, you know, if Jimmy Wilson catches the football, that's a game-changing play because right. Buffalo looks like they're going to score six. Right. No problem. Miami holds them to an opportunity for three. They make the kick. But Miami, the Dolphins did that the entire night. Right. You know, they kept Buffalo really, other than the kick return for 79 yards, they kept them out of the end zone. It was all Ryan Lindell. And that's a good sign for the Miami Dolphins. On the other side, Sam, though, Miami has to score some points. You're not going to win games in the NFL scoring in the teens. Not a lot of games.
And
you're
why we have to get the ball back.
And that's why it goes hand in hand. The Dolphins' offense needs to put, you know, some six-packs on the board, and the Dolphins' defense either needs a strip, you know, scoop and score, or a pick six, or cut the field in half. Just make the game-changing plays that are there. It's not saying you're Superman. Just make the plays that you're earning the right to make them. They're right. Just not executing.
Well, we've seen somebody, one guy, he's able to create four turnovers on his own in one game. So yeah. We need to come up with at
right.
least one.
You got to get the plays. And again, when it comes to this play calling versus execution thing, Q-Mania in the chat, he brought it up. He goes, we should blitz more to get more turnovers. I read it in Pro Football Focus the other day. Jimmy Wilson, a DB, blitzed 10 times the other night. 10 blitzes from Jimmy Wilson out of the
slot.
Yeah,
that's not the problem.
He got one pressure.
Right.
One pressure.
Getting there.
1 for 10. 10% of the time you blitz from the corner and you get a pressure. 10%.
Okay.
That's not a play calling issue, obviously.
Right. And then when you start to blitz a lot and you look at your secondary guys where Nolan Carroll went out a couple of plays, Sean Smith went out a couple of plays, you have your fourth and your fifth defensive back out there covering one-on-one, it's going to be a tough situation. And those guys aren't built to play one-on-one and be able to shut down top-tier wide receivers. So when you blitz, there is something that you're going to give up. You're putting your third
big play opportunities,
big play opportunities against because your third and fourth and fifth defensive back who's not used to being in situation to cover the back shoulder fade and not understanding when to turn your – I know we're professional players, but until you get into it in a repetitive situation, you're not used to doing those things, and it can be catastrophic too as well as doing those blitzes.
Yeah. I mean, you open yourself up, obviously, when you blitz from a corner or a position like that. Again, I think it's really easy as fans and analysts to sit back, watch on TV, watch at Sun Life Stadium and say, oh, got to blitz more. Because you see the other quarterback not getting hit, so you just sort of naturally say, got to blitz more. But the problem is the blitzes are being called, and you're not getting there. And that's almost worse than not blitzing.
It's execution. I mean, it comes down. We always talk about when you think about one-on-one matchups, you always think about, well, the wideout against the DB or the running back against the linebacker or a slot receiver against the third corner. It's a guard versus a nose tackle or a center versus a nose tackle or a tackle versus an end or a corner that's coming free trying to get to the, you know, to beat that running back or tight end to get to the quarterback. All those one-on-one matchups, if you're not winning the majority of those at critical times, you're not going to win football games. And that's why the Miami Dolphins have not been successful over the last 3 weeks. They haven't been able to win the majority or game-changing plays in those one-on-one matchups, not only on the outside, but on the interior lines of the football game.
Yeah. Q-Mania, he's not going to let it go. He said, blitzes create turnovers. Again, they are blitzing.
They create touchdowns as well.
Yeah, they can. They're blitzing. They're not blitzing. They are absolutely blitzing. One, the blitzers aren't getting to the quarterback enough, and two, the coverage behind the blitzers, not good enough. That's the issue. There's not a lack of blitz right now from this Dolphin team. One guy who plays in the secondary blitzed 10 times the other night. He got one pressure. The answer to that is not to blitz more. It's to make more of the blitz opportunities. And again, that's execution, not play calling. I think it's really easy and borderline lazy to just sit back and say, ah, coach's got to blitz more, got to throw deep more, got to run more. Well, let's think about it. Why aren't they running more? Because every time they run, they get stuffed. That's the issue here. And you're getting beat up front on offense. On defense, you're not making plays.
Go back to the two-on-one against Indianapolis in the end zone. You got the right coverage. You got two guys against one. You lose. Not only do you lose and give up a big play, it costs you 6 points. You don't win doing that.
Yeah.
And also in that game, blitzing from the left side, guess what? The quarterback going to see where the blitz is coming from because guess what? That's where we blitz from normally. They run the ball away and they get a positive 7 to 8 yards. So if you don't blitz, if you can't show it a certain way and they run away from it, and we listened to Coach Philbin talking to about Tannehill, you know, when you see a blitz, you got to get into the best play possible.
Right.
And that's what giving your quarterback ample opportunities to understand, be able to break down the situation and get the whole entire offense in the perfect situation. If they're blitzing from one way, that is why they sit there and say, hey, number 54 is the mic, and everybody else just slide the protection and they pick it up. So sometimes these blitzes are picked up,
yep.
And as a Jimmy Wilson, he has to show coverage sometimes just to try to fool the quarterback. So even if he blitz and it's a three-step drop, he's not going to get there.
Yeah, all right. Well, there's a lot to discuss when it comes to all of these things. The turnovers, the lack of takeaways, the lack of explosive plays, all things that Joe Philbin has talked about recently as being issues for the Dolphins, aside from, of course, the obvious 184 net yards in the game against Buffalo the other night. With Sam Madison and John Congemi, I'm Jesse Agler discussing a little bit Dolphins 19-14 loss at Buffalo the other day, but really trying to discuss more the reasons for the recent struggles for the Miami Dolphins. And again, we're going to try and do some next-level conversation here. It's easy to say, got to run more. Easy to say, got to blitz more. But we're looking into why the running game hasn't worked, why the blitzing hasn't worked for the Miami Dolphins, try and give you a little bit more of an honest assessment rather than just a complaint about the way this team is playing. But obviously, after three consecutive losses, things need to be done better, and they'll have the opportunity to do those things better coming up on Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. We're taking your phone calls, 1-855-GO-FINS. 1-855-GOFINS. You can also text in at 347-347. And of course, you can go to dolphins.com where you can watch the show and hang out in the live chat with Tristan Jones.
Sure can. And speaking of doing things better, Finn's 1982 says Ryan Tannehill has done a good job so far, but do you think it's time that he steps up?
I don't even know what that means, honestly, other than, I mean, yeah, you want Ryan Tannehill to play better. But again, this goes back maybe to expectations. We said from the beginning, it's going to be a roller coaster.
Yes.
He's a rookie quarterback in the National Football League. He's not just going to get better every week. That's not how it works. It's not like, oh, he's better in week three than week two, better in four than three, better in five than four. It's going to be up and down. It's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster. And before you bring up Andrew Luck or even RG3, they're different guys. They're different guys. Ryan Tannehill is not those guys. Not saying he can't have a great career. Not saying he can't end up being better than those guys, because who knows how it all turns out. But he's not the guy that we ever thought was going to make the same seamless, smooth transition into the NFL that most people expected both of those guys to have. Remember, one was the number one overall pick and a guy that was considered the most can't-miss prospect probably since John Elway. The other guy, the team that drafted him, gave up basically their next three drafts
That's
to move
right.
up and do so. So you got to remember that guy. So don't bring up those guys. It's going to be up and down. It's not easy to make the transition to this league. And yes, you'd like to see Ryan Tannehill play better, but all those other things we just talked about, the lack of takeaways, the lack of a running game, if those things were going otherwise, it would probably be helping out Ryan Tannehill.
You know what, Jesse? I'll even go as far as throw those guys into the conversation, because each one of them has had, you know, weeks that they've progressed and then other weeks where they've regressed. You can go and take a look at the Washington Redskins. They're 4-6 as a team. You know, they're not beating their chest to say, hey, RG3 is going to be here for the next 10 years and he's going to do this thing. And, you know, it's been a steady climb, you know, each week. He's had weeks where they want to forget. They want to hit the delete button because he's been the reason why they've, you know, held them back with turning the football over, taking sacks, forcing the football. All quarterbacks, no matter who you are going to go through that. Ryan Tannehill right now is going through that, and it's really – Ryan Tannehill and the cast around him need to play a lot better. And I think that's why quarterbacks, when you have a really good quarterback or a great quarterback, an elite quarterback in this league, sometimes they can mask other things because they're so good. But other times, if you're a notch below that, you need other guys to really not make mistakes. Find ways to make big plays that make you look better. You know, most of the time it's the quarterback trying to help out by not taking a sack or not throwing it into coverage or just being able to get you in a good play instead of a bad play. All of those young quarterbacks have had their moments where they've shined and they've done well on a big stage. But all of them have had probably Sundays they'd like to forget, and it's going to continue that way. But it really helps, Sam, when you have the continuity around you. If your defense plays out of their mind that week, or you get a special team score, or you play on a short field, or you win the turnover battle in a game, all those things add up to a W. And the old adage, you know, quarterbacks always get more praise when you win, and they always get more blame when you lose. That's probably true, but the guys around him, if they play at a more consistent level or make more plays in a game, you're normally going to win those games.
Yeah, you definitely want Tannehill to step up. You want him to be better. You want him to be the number one quarterback that came out of the draft last year. You want him to be all those things because he's a part of your football team and you want to see him succeed. But you look at these other guys. Just yesterday, I think Andrew Luck threw over 4 interceptions, and I'm pretty sure he's standing at the podium today like, hey, it was my fault. I need to get better. I need to do these things. The same thing that your Miami Dolphin quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, is doing. And you look at over the last 4 or 5 games that the Indianapolis Colts played, they is not like they were playing any powerhouses. I mean, they beat Cleveland, they beat Tennessee in an overtime game where the guy dove backwards, Jacksonville Jaguars, and then they get drugged by the New England Patriots. So if you put these guys on the same level and continue to help and put prospects around them to get – Tannehill is going to get better. He's going to step up. If he has opportunity to do the things that we saw early on, you know, having the protection, we know that he have the strong arm. We know he has the escapability. He can move around in the pocket. He's not afraid to stay in there and take a big hit. But over the last couple of weeks, he's been taking some punishment. Oh, yeah. So he's dealing with some injuries and some things that, you know, he hasn't dealt with before in college. And these guys are professional. So hopefully over the next couple of games, he's going to bring something out of himself and try to show these guys like, hey, I'm with you. I'm going to continue to be a productive quarterback in this league, and I'm going to be a productive quarterback in this league for a long time. And that's what I see out of Ryan Tannehill, and hopefully he can do it and get it done.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the book is not even close to being written on Ryan right. Tannehill and what he is and what he's going to be. And I'll tell you what, and this is a much bigger conversation than just Ryan Tannehill. We've gotten very quick the last couple of years to sort of dub a young quarterback, and by young I mean first or second year guy,
yes,
as like, okay, he's made it. Okay, he's going to be good. He's going to turn into a franchise QB. I don't want to get into the elite thing, Phil Sims, Eli, all that garbage that was taking place the other day, but when you're talking about franchise quarterbacks, and I guess I would define a franchise quarterback as a guy that you can build your team around and have a chance to win a Super Bowl with at some point in time. And I think as media and fans, we've gotten way too quick at dubbing guys franchise quarterbacks. Last year, after 16 games, I think if you polled 100 people that followed the NFL, fans, media, whatever, broadcasters, 98, 99 would have said, Cam Newton's a franchise QB. It's
right.
Only 1 year, but
right.
Cam Newton is a franchise QB. If you polled those same 100 people right now, you probably get 50-50.
Right.
Probably get 50-50. And now look, next year, Cam Newton may be great. May have an unbelievable season. It might be a new system. Chip Kelly might be the head coach, and they might go crazy. I don't know. Or he might get worse. It takes more than a year. It takes more than a year and a half, 2 years in some cases, to know what you've got in a quarterback. And I think that's something important to remember. So, look, when this season is over, we'll be among the millions of people saying Ryan Tannehill is blank. But we're not going to be sure. And next year could be totally different than this year. And the third year could be totally different than next year. And that's a little scary because I think we like to say, okay, we've got the guy, let's build around him, let's win now. It doesn't necessarily happen that way when you look at the guys that are franchise quarterbacks. Josh Freeman, another recent example. A couple of years ago, he went into the 2011 season as a guy that we seriously discussed as an MVP candidate.
Right.
It was terrible last year. His coach gets fired, new system. Now he's been much better again this year. But still, he almost feels like a coin flip kind of guy, doesn't he? Whether he can be the future, the long-term future of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? 50-50. 50-50 with Josh Freeman. And so, look, now some of the guys you kind of think, you know, no matter what, Andrew Luck. RG3 to me feels a little bit like Cam Newton. And I don't even mean because of style of play or anything like that. He's a guy that's just overreaching every expectation right now. Right. He's way above even what like his most ardent supporters probably thought he could be. He was 14 of 15 yesterday, for goodness sakes. Next year, he could take a step back. But just as much as I'm not going to say he's definitely the guy after this year, if he takes a step back next year, I'm not going to say he's definitely not the guy. It takes some time to figure these things out. Sam, you threw out 3 years. It's nothing any fan wants to hear because nobody wants to go through that cycle of having to wait 2-3 seasons to know if you really do have the guy, because we're all interested in the next round of QBs in
right
the draft.
Now.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying as a player in itself. I'm not saying as a quarterback because still right now I'm looking at Sean Smith and it's his fourth year, and I don't know if we got the best or most out of him yet. I think he still have some more in there to grow, and that's why, I mean, when you're talking about looking at a kid coming into the National Football League, and we can go back and we look at Peyton Manning. The first year, hey, he lost every game.
Yeah.
And then you come back the following year, and then the following year, the guy, he just all of a sudden evolved. But
look,
guess
at Troy
what happened?
Aikman.
Guess what happened?
Same thing.
Same exact thing. Guess what? The organization see the potential that he had in him, and they start putting players
around him. Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to build your team. And
no
that's
doubt.
Why I said it's going to take you at least 2 or 3 years to develop whoever that is so you can get your style of players in to come and coordinate and
it's huge.
Fit.
It's
everybody
huge.
Else's.
It's huge. You got to get it figured out. And look, they're gonna move forward no matter what happens in
regardless.
The last however many games of the season, last six games of the season. They're going to move forward building around Ryan Tannehill. And they should. They absolutely should.
Correct.
They used an eighth overall pick on him. But you're not necessarily going to know exactly what he is after this season, halfway through next season, maybe after next season. Look at these guys that they take the big step forward and a big step back, or a big step back and then a big step forward. It'll be interesting to see. Andy Dalton has had two really good seasons, or a season and a half, you know, for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's got an A.J. Green. He might take Matthew Stafford a few years ago. Last year, okay, he's the guy. He's got Calvin Johnson. That's all he needs. He's been terrible this year. Not terrible, but he hasn't been that good this year. And so it'll be really, really interesting to see how all these guys kind of shape up, because, as I've said, I think as media and as fans and as fantasy football players, we've all sort of dubbed guys franchise QBs before we're really sure just exactly what they are. And to me, franchise QB is a requisite thing to win a Super Bowl. And Shay in the live chat disagrees. We've had this conversation 100,000 times on the show. He brings up a Trent Dilfer or a Brad Johnson. I just think it's a different era right now in the National Football League. I think you have to have that elite quarterback in order to win it all. Not saying there won't be a one-off every here and there, you know, a guy that might do it. But I just think in order to like consistently year in and year out be in the Super Bowl
to have
picture,
a chance,
you've got to have one of those guys. And I think in 2000, you didn't necessarily. I think even in 2004 or 2005, you didn't necessarily. But the way the rules are now and the way the game is played now, I think you have to have one of those guys. And that's why you see every team looking for the next franchise quarterback. And that's why somebody's going to use a top 10 pick on Matt Barkley next year, even though he had a terrible season, you know, this year for the Southern Cal Trojans.
And just look where Ryan Tannehill is, because when the Dolphins picked him in last April's draft, the eighth overall pick, some of the experts around the NFL didn't even have him starting. You know, they said, right, this is a guy that needs seasoning. He only had X amount of games as a collegiate quarterback. He was a wide receiver to start with. Hey, we're not sold on the fact that he can come in and lead a franchise and be that quarterback. Well, the Dolphins, through 10 games now, are way ahead of that curve because Ryan Tannehill has been able to get on the field and perform. And you're able to build on – you can only get better if you see yourself on film and you see it in live action. You know what's going to happen. So you go back and you take a look and you try to refine what you did – well, and get it better and try to eliminate some of the mistakes that you make. So the Dolphins are way ahead of where they might have thought they would be had things didn't work out the way they did in the preseason and in training camp.
Yeah.
The guy had a chance to play, and you know they have opportunities to win football games with him at quarterback.
Well, you listen to the experts around the National Football League that, you know, when we selected Tannehill, like, oh, yeah, he's going to – and then all of a sudden they see him on the football field and it's like, well, I knew if they put him in the game and they put him in a situation that he would be successful because he did this, he did that. And just understanding and visualizing – and knowing the coaches that he have around him. And we always go back, it takes that coaching to bring the best out of these guys, and that is what's happening, and hopefully he's only going to get better.
Yeah, and Shea's larger point, which I agree with completely, is look, you got to get him help up front. The offensive line has to play better. The wide receivers have to make more plays. The running game needs to get back on track. All of those things are absolutely true in the big picture, and they would be true for any quarterback at any point in his career, pretty much. And we'll see. It'll be an interesting couple of years. There's no question about it. This year was the rookie year, the kind of figure-it-out year. Next year is the let's add some pieces to the puzzle year and hopefully, you know, compete throughout the entire season for a playoff spot, not just into the month of November.